the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
But first, a worrying new trend emerged in the world of warfare this week when thousands of pagers and radio devices exploded in a series of coordinated attacks on Hezbollah members in Lebanon. The result was mass casualties and chaos. The UN has denounced the device blasts as a violation of international law. Are such targeted tech-driven attacks the future of warfare? We're joined by Professor Michael Clark, specialist in defence studies, visiting professor at King's College London and former director of the Royal United Services Institute. You're very welcome. First of all, many people were surprised when they heard about these pager and walkie-talkie blast attacks that this was even technically possible. Is this this new trend, is this the future of modern warfare, do you think?
Well, in one sense it is. In another sense, although it was very spectacular, it was spectacular in a slightly old-fashioned way. Because we wondered at the time how it was that several thousand pagers were exploding all at once. And people thought, well, maybe they've been the software has been tampered with so that the lithium batteries overheated. But it would be very hard to make more than 1,000 of them all overheat at the same time, when some of them have been indoors, some outdoors, some next to somebody's body in the back pocket or whatever. And then it became fairly clear that actually there's something a bit more basic gone on, even though it's very impressive from an intelligence point of view, which is that these pagers were actually had explosives in them. They had maybe 40 grams of explosives. And it looks as if the Israeli Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service, had become a firm called BAC with an address in Hungary, a meaningless address in Hungary, and that they had actually created these devices. And the word at the moment is that they created some thousands of these devices, and many of them just worked as pagers, and they were sent to the market perfectly normally. And then some of them were filled with explosives to be sent specifically to Hezbollah.
So it really involved getting right inside the supply chain of it. But if you look at it, one of the things about that attack and the nature of it is it really spreads out around a country, the notion of a battlefield, because people may well have been in literally a couple of thousand different places all at once. Do you think that advanced technology of this kind or of other kinds are changing and widening or compressing the idea of the battlefield?
What they involve is that they can draw in the civilian population to any war. I mean, we would normally say that a civilian population only really gets mobilized in a major war, a war for survival, like the First World War or the Second World War, or wars like Ukraine now, where the whole of Ukraine is under threat from a Russian invasion that wants to take over the whole country if it could. And in those situations, the whole of the society becomes involved in one way or another. But now we're in a situation where even relatively smaller wars may actually involve the whole of the population, because modern societies are vulnerable to interference right down to the lowest levels, through cyber hacking, through ransomware, through attack on critical national infrastructure.
And what about AI?
So it means that the whole society gets involved in it.
And what about AI and artificial intelligence? Does that have a part to play in this changing landscape of new warfare?
Not quite yet, but it will do soon, is the answer. AI is still in its infancy as a policy instrument, but it's developing very quickly. And as AI becomes integrated with military systems, particularly things like drones, I mean, thousands of drones. I mean, at the moment, every drone more or less has to be controlled by one person. But imagine 1,000 drones only controlled by one person, and most of them actually running on an AI system that learns what's happening below it on the battlefield. We're on the verge of an AI revolution in battlefield technologies. Yeah.
What about who's developing that technology and the idea, and how can AI be applied?
All of the big countries. So the United States is in the forefront of it. The Russians are a bit behind. The Chinese, we're not sure what they're doing. Enormous secrecy. But the assumption is, yes, they're developing the same sorts of things. Britain is actually quite good on this in terms of engineering and science of it, but less good on the application of it. It's the usual thing that British technology is very advanced, but its application is poor because the investment isn't there. And other West European countries contribute to these things because they're not all being done in one country. They're being done in firms like BAE Systems, who operate across different countries in Europe and the United States. So if you look at certain companies buying in expertise from the small, medium enterprise, is the sort of the creatives, many of them in the gaming industry, funnily enough, the computer gaming industry.
In the
which
gaming
is very
industry.
Inventive. Yeah. I mean, most AI, the application of AI to warfare has come through computer games. And the computer gaming industry is streets ahead of most other areas in terms of innovation. And so it comes from the civilian sectors, yeah.
And what is this thing, Michael, simulated synthetic environment? What is that, and what's its potential application?
Well, this is the ability to simulate a whole society in every meaningful respect. So to understand exactly how the street lamps work, how they're controlled, how the traffic lights work, how the electricity grid works, what the traffic flow is at rush hours as opposed to non-rush hours, how the trains operate and so on. You can create a complete environment virtually for a whole society, and it's been done, I've seen it, for a small society. You can create a whole environment. So then you know that if you interfere with this or that, it will have the following effects. And this simulated synthetic environment is something which is being developed as a way of being able to impact a foreign society without necessarily bombing it. There may be all sorts of ways of bringing a grid down, grid or whatever.
Is that the kind of thing that even smaller private companies in different countries are working on?
Yes, it all comes through the inventive small companies that are doing this sort of work for ministries of defence. It's happening around the world. The ministries of defence, whether you're talking about the Pentagon or the British Ministry of Defence or Moscow, they're too big to develop these things. These things are all developed in smaller laboratories, but they exist and they will play. They've not been deployed, as far as I know, so far, but within 10 years or so, we'll be talking about the ability of one society to, if you like, control the traffic lights of another in ways that it finds useful.
And all of the disruption
in a crude way.
Yeah, the disruption that
exactly.
will go with that. Do you think, exactly. I mean, airlines have banned pagers, I think some airlines in some countries on foot of this recent attack. Do you think we can expect more of this kind of thing? And what about mobile phones?
Well, I go back to where I started. What the Israelis had done is, in a way, a bit old-fashioned. They'd put explosives in devices, and then the devices were used by Hezbollah. So that's not quite as cyber clever as it might imagine. They just found a way of giving everybody a device which happened to have some explosives in it. So we're not quite at the point yet where a computer nerd could make everybody's phones explode and injure them. That's not the case at the moment, and it's hard to see how that might actually be made to work.
Well,
so we shouldn't be too alarmist about what the Israelis have done, but what they have done is shown how vulnerable everybody is because we've all got devices on us.
It certainly sounds quite dystopian, and maybe we'll take some comfort from the fact that it's not quite there yet. Professor Michael Clark of King's College London, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.